Ms. Frick, any response to some of those issues?
Yes, Mayor, members of the council. We'd like to highlight a couple of issues. One, as you heard, was the related to the sediment that will be dredged out of the Colorado Lagoon. And we would like Jeff Bennett, who's a geologist with expertise in kind of the removal, remediation, transport, and monitoring of that kind of sediment. We'd like him to explain to the council and the appellants exactly what will occur to assure everyone that, in fact, the removal and remediation will be done in a safe manner.
Evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. Just want to kind of run back through my notes that I took while you were presenting, and I was trying to scroll down, so I understand where you're coming from with not having a ton of time. But certainly, one of the things that I do, I'm a geologist. I work for a firm that does environmental remediation. I flew back down here from a project that we're working on in the Port of Stockton, actually right now, and I'm going back tomorrow, where we're remediating lead-contaminated soil under the DTSC oversight. I'm very familiar with William Boson, who had given some information about what needs to be done. And really, the premise of where I'm coming from is that I was asked to take a look at the conditions presented in the EIR, the mitigation measures, and see if that's in line with what we normally see, and it certainly is. What we see as an environmental remediation contractor is a framework that's essentially rooted in regulation to give us an overarching structure for what we have to do. And then we as the contractor are responsible for meeting those mitigation measures when we implement the project. So I put together a brief write-up that talks about how that would be handled on a project such as this. And one of the things that's very specific is that dust must be controlled. Not only is the dust itself a problem, the content of the dust, those hazardous materials, are a problem. The way that this project will be done in the field is that the material will be dredged out in a wet manner. It will be stored in a wet manner. There's been some talk about drying the piles, and certainly that is not the right way to do it. Those piles would be maintained in a wet condition, and certainly now under the new approach where it's going to be treated, that material needs to be wet for the treatment to take place. It would be wasting time and money to dry it out, and it would certainly expose it to the potential spreading by the wind, which nobody wants. Now, a couple of the things that we have to consider here is that on any project that we do, we have to keep the streets clean. So you'll see there's some pictures that I included in the write-up that the on-site material can't be tracked out into the street. And I certainly agree. Street sweeping once a day, if that's all you're going to say, is not enough. You do have to sweep the street when it's dirty, and that controls dust. That's one of the things. You have to keep the dirt from getting onto the street, and if it gets on the street, someone there has to spot it, pick it up, and take care of it immediately. No questions asked. And it's not just the AQMD regulations that require that. It's stormwater control. The city will have people taking a look to make sure that that's being taken care of. That's obviously always a concern. When it comes back to air monitoring, certainly the statement that Mr. Boson put out about the Owyha chisel is appropriate. That chisel is specific to, as it was recently calculated, to ingestion of lead-contaminated material, but it can be applied also to dust. And a project-specific number would be calculated, and air monitoring on the perimeter and on site would be conducted to ensure that those levels are maintained. And that information, the projects that we normally do, that information gets put on the website, it gets disseminated to the public, there'll be public notices that are distributed, there'll be a big, broad, gigantic 1-800 phone number. If you see dust, call it, and somebody's in trouble is the answer, and you need to take care of that. I'm sure you guys have seen those signs all over the place, and that's the state of the art of the current rules right now, is that you have to protect the dust spreading, and the contaminants that it carries with it absolutely have to be controlled. No questions asked. So that perimeter monitoring, we normally use upwind monitors, downwind monitors. Our staff carry handheld dust monitors to prove compliance. These are data logging machines that aren't just qualitative. They're a quantitative proof that you have controlled the dust. And that information will be put into the permanent record Samples will be collected and analyzed for lead to specifically prove compliance. So there's a lot of things that, take place that are essentially underneath this overarching structure of what the EIR has presented that would be taken into account as the project is put into place. Now, there were a couple other little questions here and there that I want to try to make sure that I address. There was talk of how the one of the original mitigation measures only considered an OVA, which is for monitoring volatile organic compounds. That is true, but it also talked about OEHA standards for lead, and to prove the OEHA compliance, like I was just saying, you've got to have the dust monitors. And so that's one of the pieces of the puzzle that, certainly would be put into place by the contractor and is required by that mitigation measure. So it's really pretty much covered. Uncovered piles, again, obviously a bad thing, and we know that, and that's the kind of thing that the contractor has to do. Those piles have to be covered to keep the dust under control. Contact names, absolutely. Yeah, street sweeping once per day at a minimum. Honestly, street sweepers come in a four-hour minimum, and you're going to have them for all 4 hours or you're going to have them for all day. And we actually, even on a project we have right now, we have a street sweeper parked and ready, waiting, because that's how important it is. We deal with lead levels that are several times higher than the lead that was here. I actually provide an example of a project we completed in San Diego where we had residents on the fence line directly adjacent to our project with lead levels well over 7,000 milligrams per kilogram. We're here, the maximum is 1,200, and we monitored the material, had no exceedances, and that's really state-of-the-art in our industry. Speed limits, absolutely. The reagents, having stockpile reagents covered, the reagents would not be stored in open stockpiles. They'll be in silos that are enclosed and with bag houses on them. Speed limits are always part of it, too. Now, one other little thing I want to switch to a little bit is that the discussion of the metals concentrations in the park soil. I took a look at those concentrations, and from what I can see, those are all basically background. There are some arsenic concentrations that look to be, when compared to the published numbers, they look to be higher. The problem is EPA put out numbers that are below our background, and the EPA manual for the usage of these numbers actually specifically addresses California and its arsenic concentrations and says, by the way, California arsenic is higher than our numbers, and in that case you should use background numbers. And the California Department of Toxic Substances Control, in their study of safety for new school sites, has actually documented that the actual background concentration of arsenic in California ranges up to 12, which is well above the concentrations detected at the park. And I believe that covers everything that was brought up. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Ms. Frick, anything else?
So, Mayor, members of the council, you can see is that although the City of Long Beach may be granting the approvals, there are a host of other regulatory agencies that are going to be overseeing this project. You heard that it's the EPA, the Regional Water Quality Board, the Department of Toxic Substances. I mean, they will be monitoring and regulating what is occurring there. Although we may be pursuing the construction, this is going to be a heavily regulated activity, and so that all precautions will be in place. So with that, I think that concludes kind of the staff presentation, if you want to open it up for public testimony.
I'd like to exercise my right of rebuttal.
I'll give you a brief rebuttal, please. Come on.
It's really nice that your consultant pretty much agrees with my comments. And from what I've heard, I don't see any reason why this council shouldn't adopt the recommendations that I've submitted into record tonight. I do want to point something out about the Marina Vista Park sediment sampling. Again, it was a composite sampling. And when core type sampling on the Colorado Lagoon was done, composite is they take it down to, I don't know, 9 feet, and then they analyze it. But I think it's below 3 and 6 foot is where the worst contamination is in the lagoon. So when they actually went and looked for hot spots, the amount of lead went way up. And all that's been done on Marina Vista Park is composite sampling, and I think it's important that the city actually do some core-type sampling on Marina Vista Park. And the reason why is that the EIR noted the increased levels of arsenic and stated that it's indicative of fill that had been used from, like, oil well dredging. So potentially the arsenic level could be much higher, because if you remember the lagoon where the culvert is, it was filled in the 50s from land that was probably not so nice land. So I'm hoping that the city does additional testing in Marina Vista Park. So I guess I would like to recommend that my recommendations get adopted into the city's mitigation measures, because they were clearly not included in neither the EIR or the amendment. And the city attorney's office has told me that this is something that the council can do. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lett.